Hello. This is Sarah Obreitis, and you are listening to the start of Eat to the Beat, a program of Heritage Radio Network. A show that showcases the enmeshed worlds of food and farming and music, art, and other expressive genres. Today's show is about community fundraising, as told by Feast, an outfit in Brooklyn, which stands for Funding Emerging Art with Sustainable Tactics. The organization is headed by art director Jeff Nilica, and its culinary directors, so to speak, are Molly O'Rourke and David Michael Perez. All three are in the studio with us. Hello and welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hola. So, bystanders may mistake Feast events as, like a huge birthday party with friends, booze, and crazy revelry, which is also true, but there are many layers that help build up these events. And so, Jeff, why don't we ask you, so Feast is part of a national sort of feeling of the importance of taking back control, to taking matters into our own hands related to politics, to cultural inspiration. And I'm wondering how that plays out at Feast events.
Sure. I guess, first of all, I don't know if I'm the art director. I think I'll relinquish that title. There's a collective of a lot of people, probably 15, 20 people that work on the project. And so I'll dispel that myth right now.
Okay.
But
it sounded so important.
It did.
I can't hold the outfit.
Okay, now I'm not nervous anymore. So the way Feast works is you show up. We work out of a church basement in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, which is a really just sweet space where I pick up my CSA, my farm share, for the past couple seasons, three seasons, winter season as well. And we have about 250, 300 people that show up each time. And everyone gets supper and a ballot. And then around the room are about 15 different Brooklyn-based artists. Actually, it has always been Brooklyn-based artists. We're starting to get interest from outside the borough, which is exciting and kind of weird and interesting. We charge a small door. We ask $10 to $20 at the door, but no one gets turned away. And we offer a locally sourced organic meal. And whoever gets the most votes gets the money that we collect at the door. And then they come back and show what they've been working on. So it's like this really simple idea.
So whether you're one or you're one of 15 that friends that come to the door, you're about to walk in and meet several hundred other people because you're sitting at a long table. It is kind of like a birthday party because there's a sense of certainly festivity going on.
Well, it's like it's a church basement. You know, it has that sort of sense that everyone's there. No one's really more important than anyone. It's just a really, in an area that has often high pretense, it's, I think, a fairly unpretentious vibe. It's really unassuming.
Yeah, I remember after the first one running into a girl like on the street a few days later, and she was like, "Oh, hey, like I saw you at Feast. I was there. It was great." And I never met her, but in her, she was like, "Yeah, it was so great." And she got kind of awkward for a second. She was like, "It was very un-New York." But I think it's so funny. And it's not that she was trying to be disparaging about New York, but it has, yeah, that sort of like not competitive feeling, a very like communal, feeling to it.
Like a church supper. It has like that community vibe to it. Mm-hmm. It's really nice.
It's the best of I guess, both parts of the world, New York and outside. People are like smoking on church steps and like, you know, they have access to these great, you know, great kegs of beer in the house. But the place is seriously transformed to aid the conversation that is posed by all of these proposals. So, you know, that Feasts inspire They inspire contemplation, and they inspire, well, perhaps one of you can talk about some of the proposals. You're reaching your first year anniversary, so you've had about 12 or 14 of these feasts. So over how many?
We've had five.
Oh, five.
Five or six.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No,
another
six,
yeah. Another exaggeration. Well, of the five,
big impact, big
right,
impact.
Right. Okay, I'm trying. So, of these five, can you guys point out a few? Of course, they're all worthy of mention, but
we have funded 14 projects.
Maybe
we funded
14
projects, so I think that sometimes we fund more than one.
Because they're proposal. Because the votes are too close. It's like too close
and
to call.
And there's just enough money. You know, a lot of the projects we aren't asking for. You know, a multi-year. You know, someone that needs $40,000.
This is micro funding. Like, I mean, that's what we should emphasize. That part of I guess the world, the trend to nourish community services through. Are through projects like this that are funded by the community and that happen in the community, and it doesn't take a lot of money. You know, you pull yourself up by very little, or you execute something really interesting with very little, like $1,000 or sometimes $400.
And it also has inspired other people to start fundraising themselves, you know. And I think it just is, you know, a project by a Bushwick artist named Lydia Bell. Lydia, if you're out there, hello. she's a choreographer, and her project was called Work for Pay, and she took she won $400. She's a runner up, and she hired three unemployed artists and paid them $8 an hour for rehearsal time, and you know, employed them till the money was gone. And then they would, the performance involved inspiration from their unemployment. So, you know, the performance would be things like them, you know, this sort of choreography of them trying to like show their, like why they're hireable and employable. And, you know, once they were hired and employed, then like the dance was done.
But the dance is never over.
But she
fat lady never sings.
She went and raised another several hundred dollars, I think, at Tandem. And I, you know, I don't think it's even a project she would have been doing without, you know, that first sort of push. So I don't,
exactly.
Maybe we can all like. I'd love to hear what some of your favorites.
Yeah,
are.
Molly. Is there a project that resonates, and it didn't even have to win the pot? You know, if there was one that you voted on that didn't make it.
Yeah, I think there have been so many great projects, I think, that have encouraged me to think about our neighborhood in a way that I might not have considered before. I think Green My Bodega is a really great project by a group of folks who are interested in bringing, you know, local organic food into the bodegas that are on all of our street corners. And, you know, all of these folks are farmers are busy and these bodega owners are busy. And like, who can be the person that could make this, could be the liaison? And like, how do we actually make this food truly accessible? And I think these are folks, it's so interesting to see these projects that, you know, within a lot of other grant structures wouldn't necessarily fit very comfortably. And at Feast, this was a project that, you know, all sorts of community members felt really resonated with them and with their street corner and with where their apartment was. And that was a grant that I think, you know, we'll see how it turned out at the next feast. We'll get to see, you know, what they've been working on and where they're at. But I think it was a really exciting idea for folks in the community.
100%. We'll come back and talk more about the criteria for calls of proposals. We'll talk about your upcoming feast, which would be your 106th. Feast dinner.
Something
I'm kidding.
Like that. Like that.
And these feast dinners also a reminder. Feast stands for Funding Emerging Art with Sustainable Tactics. We'll talk about the sustainable tactics and the delicious food that our culinary artists here create. And at these events, there are performers, sometimes dancers, and always a lot of music. So we're about to play. For our interlude, a band called Oh Liza Jane, and this is Nice Time, and this is actually recorded live at a feast.
A Sunday's best is your Tuesday's worst.
Hello, this is Eat to the Beat. We're on Heritage Radio Network. Obviously, you're listening to us now, heritageradionetwork.com. That was Oliza Jane performing at a feast event in Brooklyn, New York, which is where our guests host almost bi-monthly, I guess every other month or so, events that help fund emerging art, bringing together people over scrumptious, delicious food that I think you guys are deeply involved with right now for this weekend's event. This weekend being February 6th.
Is that February 6th, Saturday, 5 to 8 is this upcoming feast.
So what happened was, I guess, proposals for financing, which is in the ballpark of a couple hundred dollars to a little bit over $1,000, get submitted before a due date, which was, I guess, at the end of January. So folks should be on the lookout for those funding cycles. And you guys, how does the, please tell us how the food plays out at these events? Where, how do you end up sourcing your ingredients, preparing for such a humongous crowd, executing service?
There are a lot of components. Well, you know, we started cooking for the first feast a year ago in our very, very small apartment kitchen. And we were prepared, you know, we had no idea what feast would hold for us. And we thought it'd be a really great time with a bunch of friends. And it, and you know, we kind of estimated maybe 150 people. We don't really know. So we tried to wing it a little bit. You know, David and I had never cooked a meal that big before. And we were working on a really small budget and trying to keep it within the parameters of being as, you know, local and sustainable and seasonal as possible on, you know, $1.50 per person budget.
That was your budget.
So, you know, we gave it a try. For that first feast, we made ribollita soup. And, you know, it's a really basic, it's a peasant stew for a bunch of, you know, kids like us who are getting together and trying to start this thing for the first time.
Did you ask for help from your suppliers? Did you get
we didn't, you know, at that point we didn't have suppliers. Like, we really pulled this thing together in about a month, and so we just went grocery shopping. I mean, we really didn't have anything special for that first feast. But as the feast progressed and we started thinking a little more ahead of time about what we might like to cook and trying to think about how to keep it varied and interesting.
Yeah, your reputation is on the line.
Truly.
Seriously. Mm-hmm. Heavy hitters attending these opinionated people.
It's true. Yeah, we just try to, you know, connect with folks that we really like in the neighborhood. They're, you know, we're lucky to be in a place, you know, we're in the midst of a city, but there are a lot of really cool people producing food and growing food on rooftops and, you know, having honey on their roofs. You know, it's like, it's a really amazing place to source local food from. Yeah, so we're working on it. It's a slow process. You know, we never have as much time as we think we will. We all have full-time jobs that we're doing as well. But, you know, we're at a place now where we actually do have a really amazing group of suppliers. We are lucky enough to have Brooklyn Brewery donating beer for all of our events, and we're working with Heritage. You know, we're actually going to be introducing meat to our menu for the very first time on Saturday, making tamales based on a family recipe.
Yeah, I must say, you guys, I was pleasantly surprised that you would have kept the menu not vegan but vegetarian at the very least. I mean, that there's people seem to think that meat eating is like is pervasive, but clearly, you know, you paid homage to those who like clearly don't want to have anything to do with that. So that was very nice of you guys to keep it off the menu. But
yeah, I mean, it was partially, you know, for economic reasons, and we just wanted to be as inclusive as possible, and we didn't want to, you know, sort of like have meat that we weren't, you know, couldn't be sure about, like how sustainable and ethical, ethical, how ethically it came to us. But luckily we've, yeah, like been able to foster like a network of great people where we can feel good about that.
So, back to these proposals, Jeff, we were mentioning before the show, the trends that we've seen, whether they're seasonally, you notice proposals that are sort of in similar genres sort of creep up at the same time. Say, for instance, around spring, you have more proposals about rooftop gardening, beekeeping, that sort of thing, as you mentioned, Molly. When I was there last, I noticed a whole bunch of proposals about, this was a few months ago, about the real estate crisis, you know, what to do with the gaping holes in our streets and the vacant office buildings and residences. Are there any others that you've, do you see any sort of emerging concerns or topics or anything that sort of you can spot as being additional trends to the proposals that can sort of give us an insight into what's happening in our society?
Whoa.
Or is that a stretch?
I really looked at you guys as a keyhole into
what's going on in the borough.
I think there's like a couple really, I think there, you know, we've seen a demand for libraries. We've seen that as a theme. I think we've seen a lot of proposals thinking about like alternative and new ways of educating each other. I think people are really wanting that.
I think there's also been a kind of prevalent idea of like thinking about mobility and how we can transport food and start discussions through like mobile kind of art pieces mm-hmm. or projects. We've definitely seen a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's interesting too, I've never really even thought about this, so I'm going to think through a thought on the air, which is a bad idea probably.
But, I do it all the time.
But, you know, I think when we started, there was an interest in looking at sustainable modes of food production, right? That like those seemed to be successful and interesting to us, and that they were in like kind of direct conflict with the way that culture is produced. That, you know, sort of when you look at museums, cultural institutions, granting organizations, you know, the entire, you know, gallery system, you know, that entire art world, of which many of us are, you know, in some capacity a part of, that it felt totally outside of that, that there was no connection. So how could we look to localism? How could we look to CSAs? How could we look to grocery co-ops? How could we look to composting and use those sort of basic ideas and apply them to how we create art funding, right? And so as you're saying this, it reminds me of the CSA, right? Like there's like a farm to table, there's a studio to audience, right? Like, and mm-hmm. and that there's this real totally. Direct context. And so like sometimes you get a lot of tomatoes and sometimes you get a lot of squash. And right now we're seeing a lot of, you know, it's February and people want green things. And so we're seeing a lot of farming projects, you know, and sometimes you get three kohlrabi, but you like negotiate it, and sometimes you can figure out what to do with some kohlrabi.
You just braise it with some bacon. It's good.
And it's okay.
No, and it's also about bringing together that the maker with the taker, and by bringing hundreds of people into, you know, trapping them into this one room among a dozen at least different proposals, and the creators behind those proposals, there are so many amazing conversations and back and forth that eventually everything in that room, wherever these projects end up going, they're evolving because they're supported by community members.
And they're being sustained by community members, whether or not they get a grant, that people right. become personally invested in what these folks are doing. And, you know, they follow up and they stay in touch and they try to offer services when they can.
Right. We're going to come back and talk a little bit about how Feast actually got a jump start through Kickstarter. Because Woo! There are some really, mm-hmm. that's for those of you guys who don't know about Kickstarter, we'll have to fill you in. And now we will play a little something from a band called Family Band, which has connections to our friends at Feast. Hello again, that was Family Band, a favorite of our guests here from Feast, which stands for Funding Emerging Art through or with sustainable. Very important, though, that preposition. We have Molly O'Rourke and David Michael Perez, who head the literal Feast part, and Jeff, who, Jeff Nilica, he's just kind
I'm
of around.
Around.
His last name actually means rotten fruit, which I think is fascinating
in Czechoslovakian.
Yes, exactly.
And it's not like a fermentation thing or something cool. Like
it's like
Czech
a rotten apple.
It. Yeah, it's like not good.
No, oh no,
it's not good.
Nilica. Well, Jeff certainly helped spearhead Feast in Brooklyn, which brings together microfinancing opportunities to emerging artists that want to do anything related to dance and performance, to refurbishing an empty, defunct space that's an eyesore and underutilized in specifically the borough of Brooklyn, to another one called Greening My Bodega, which brings great and healthier and a wider variety of good foods to the neighborhood, et cetera, et cetera. But Feast is part of a growing network of groups in places like Portland and Chicago that run events called Stew and Scoop and Snoop and and all that sort of good stuff, which apparently you were inspired by one of these events that probably shakes out a little differently in another city. I don't know which one specifically kind of got you going.
In Chicago was like the big starter. And I think they do Sunday Soup. And I think what's really cool for me, you know, like in going back to this idea of like food to art metaphor, you know, like we don't want to be Whole Foods. I like always say that we don't want to be Whole Foods. Like we are a national network of CSAs, you know, we're just instead of getting together and showing
art
up every week and getting our groceries, we're showing up every couple months and getting our art.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, each city is just like every CSA is a little funky and different. You know, we went up to the Berkshires over New Year's and saw a CSA that operated so differently than anything that I've ever seen. We did several farm tours, which is really amazing, to see what's going on up there.
What was it that they did so dramatically differently?
They just like had a room with like their produce in it, and you just walked in and took it. It was sort of the vibe there.
Like zero.
Like there was like no one. It was like on the farm. Like it was like no volunteers, nothing. I mean, they like you just showed up and took what you needed to take.
The honest system to the nth degree.
No, so I think in that same vein, each of these different places, you know, has a different take that's important to their community. You
and
know, at Incubate in Chicago, they've been, you know, they have sort of a 40 person meal. It's really intimate. It's really discursive. And, you know, I was just talking to them yesterday and they were saying how, you know, for the first like 6 months, they were doing this every week. and no one would show up to it. I mean, they would have like two people that would show
oh,
up.
No.
And, you know, so it's very different. You know, their needs and systems are very, now they've been going for 3 years. You know, in Portland, they do a lot of like, you know, backyard garden gleaning and really try to get people to bring produce to help, you know, so they aren't even like working with a farm. They're like sourcing their food collectively, communally.
But the two common denominators are breaking bread together and supporting underground art projects.
Yeah, and I think that's why it works in Brooklyn so amazingly, right? Like, where else are there this many people that are thinking through an aesthetic lens, like really intensely? And then also, you have so many cultures here. You know, there's people from everywhere in the entire world here. Mm-hmm. And everyone knows how to get together and have a dinner. You know, that's what everyone does, regardless of where you're from. There's like this really basic core human experience of sitting down, eating some food, talking about what's going on, whether that's a problem in your community or whether that's about music that you're listening to or kids in your neighborhood or, you know, it's this really basic thing. And so you automatically have a vocabulary to work within.
And these proposals they're at the whim of whatever sort of subjective, you know, the feelings that your guests have at that moment. So like they're probably all like twiddling their thumbs. What is it? How is it going to shake out tonight? But as you mentioned, due to whatever circumstances exist at the end of the night, you can sometimes take the till and share it among several proposal makers, and then they always come back. They have accountability. They always have to return at some point, sooner rather than later, to tell us almost as a lesson, you know, lesson learned, to see how they grew up, but also to allow them to share some of their, I suppose, just their overall experience and some of the details that may have changed from the original proposal. So that gets you guys a lot of repeat customers, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely. And I think there's something to be said too about the way that the current system of most funding works, right? That you're like, you throw a party or you write a grant or you get money somehow, and it's like really separate from your project. And I think that what's been interesting, I don't think this is how all art should be produced, but it is a nice alternative where the work that's being made is really connected to how you're paying for it. You know, mm-hmm. it's there's something that there, it's not outside of it, which I think is really refreshing to me, at least.
The community picks it and the artist makes it for that community, yeah. You know, in a very kind of direct way.
Totally.
Yeah, they had, you guys had, speaking of your librarian or so the book binding trends you spoke about, you had a couple of guys come back and explain their new system of loaning books. They made books. They handed them out. People who got the books were supposed to pass them on, etc. So there they are on the stage, you know, speaking to the people who had to who allowed sort of this project to get off the ground. And it was super sweet. I mean, it just makes seeing them come full circle, such projects, is the greatest satisfaction, I guess, for both parties. So I salute you.
And also, just another sort of connection to the food piece, you know, that it's Amber and Andrew. They are called
Underground
Library. Yes.
And they talk a lot about how their books, they make heirloom books. And they really look at, you know, this sort of how heirloom, you know, produce and food is created. And that it's slow, it's intimate, it has to be distributed really in a calculated and grown in a calculated way. So it's mm-hmm. it's worth looking at.
And they are two of the sweetest human beings
oh my God.
You ever meet, for the record.
Yeah. And for the record, before we have to sign off, I want to point out Kickstarter.com, which is a place where a lot of these artists that are involved in Feast, whether they got sort of the prize money or not, it's an online site where, I mean, now like thousands, tens of thousands of projects in different categories, based in different parts of the world, are able to sort of vie for the attention of people sitting there with a PayPal account, and they can, you know, visitors to the site can give as little as 10 bucks or as much as, you know, sky's the limit. And so Feast, I guess, has recently covered those sort of nominal but growing food costs.
Woo-hoo.
Because you hit some. What did you? Yeah, tell us more about how you got Kickstarter to help you out.
Well, you know, Kickstarter is a great organization where basically you're, you know, charged with setting a realistic goal for your fundraising, and you encourage folks to donate online. And if you meet your goal, you get the money. And if you don't meet your goal, you don't get anything.
That's
it's a real good impetus to get folks donating. And we were so excited 2 days ago. Our fundraising with Kickstarter closes on Feast Day, and we met our $2,500 goal. And you know, these come from 65, 70 people who made small donations, and makes a huge impact for a small organization like us. You'll literally cover all our food costs for a year.
So. Yeah, and what that means is for the artists, we can give more of the money directly to them because our food costs, basically all of our overhead, is met already. It's a big deal for us.
And it also means that you get to experiment with family recipe of tamale making with good masa, good wild ingredients that wouldn't typically have made.
Exactly. Yeah, we have a lot more
leeway with what you bring in.
Exactly. Yeah, for the upcoming feast on the February 6th, we're making tamales that Molly and I had learned just this last month with my grandmother in Texas. Like, it's the tamale recipe that I grew up eating all my whole life, and you know, we spent the weekend making about 750 tamales, both pork and vegetarian. So yeah, it'll be great. I mean, we'll be able to really sort of plan things out in greater detail and really dedicate as much of our, you know, time and resources as we can to making Feast really great.
And a video of tamale making and of a lot of other things related to this project is on Feast Brooklyn, minus all the vowels, I guess. Feast in Brooklyn.
Feast.
What is it?
FeastInBKLYN.org.
Feast in
Brooklyn.
Buckland.
Feast in BKLYN.org.
Website.
And that was Jeff Nilica. Did I say it properly?
Yeah, totally. You're on.
Jeff Rottenfruit.
And that was David Michael Perez. And we have Molly O'Rourke here, all from Feast, that supports great projects that have been in desperate need of local support. So check out feastinbrooklyn.org and also check them out for real on February 6th in Greenpoint, New York.
Ow!
That's a bus, a two-beater.